Parks and Beyond.
Welcome back as we kick off the third and final hour of this edition of Feedback, your on-air town square, a unique show that combines news and talk on current issues, and unlike other talk shows where the views of the host are the focal point, here on Feedback, it's the opinions of you, the listeners, that are front and center. Good morning, everyone. I'm Bill Saunders, along with Sean Tansky, and our phone numbers here are 610-374-8800, toll-free, 888-401-0459. Our dedicated text line is 484-650-3373. And our email address is feedback@830weeu.com. By the way, don't forget, Phillies baseball tonight at 6:40 as they're in game two of their three-game series against the Yankees. And I'm keeping my fingers crossed that they do better tonight than they did last night against the Yankees. What a blowout that was. All right, well, joining me on the phone right now is State Representative Seth Grove. He's a Republican who represents York County, and he's also chairman of the House GOP Appropriations Committee, and we welcome him to Feedback. Seth, good morning. Thank you for joining us today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. Great to be here. It's a beautiful day here in York County.
Now, yesterday, I talked about an article that I saw you posted on LinkedIn over the weekend, and you voiced your concerns about it. And let me refresh for people who either heard it yesterday and may have forgotten about it or weren't listening yesterday. So bear with me for just a minute. The governor apparently held what Penn Live, in their article, describes as a low profile, which to me, Seth, means that it was held in secret or thereabouts. It was an invitation-only event that was called a democracy summer camp, and it was held at the Franklin Institute for digital content creators from around the country, not just here in Pennsylvania. And according to Penn Live, one participant told the paper the purpose of this meeting was to promote the election this November and combat misinformation. All right, with that said, Seth, what you have concerns about this. Share with us what they are.
Yeah, so obviously when this pops up, number one, who's paying for it? Who's invited? And what's the overall goal? Is this really a nonpartisan where you're inviting Republicans and Democrats, presenters are Republicans and Democrats, and you're discussing how elections actually work and that kind of stuff? And we're still digging into this. We're still getting information because it was held in secret. Luckily, all the participants are active on social media. So that's how we're piecing this together, what happened and what was discussed through social media posts by these individuals who were invited. So far, we know that everybody invited were basically left-leaning. Some are literally Democrat political operatives, former Democrat, candidates for Congress. So it was all left-leaning people that are on social media that attended. So we don't know of any quote Republicans that were involved in this. We know Josh Shapiro obviously talked, Bob Casey talked, and, Bob Casey doesn't show up for work until it's his time to run for office. So, it's political in nature when he's involved with stuff. So, the only Republican we know that was there was Al Schmidt, who is the Governor Shapiro's Secretary of State. So not really a, Republican, but, someone who works for the governor who happens to be a Republican was there. It was paid for by taxpayers. So the governor's office did say they don't know how much it costs. We don't know if the government, your tax dollars went to pay for transportation, pay for hotel and housing for these individuals. We know there was an after party at a bar, a happy hour. We don't know if taxpayers paid for alcohol. We don't know a lot about what the expenses were to cover the costs. We're still tracking, trying to find out who else spoke and what they said at this event, and what exactly, quote, is misinformation, and what did they ask them to actually do as part of this training seminar? Are they asking them to push back in a campaign side for candidates? So it's very murky as to what was actually presented to these individuals as was, quote, misinformation and what it is to, quote, save democracy. We're still trying to piece that together.
To your knowledge, Seth, do you know of any other governor here in the state that has ever held a similar summer camp?
No, this is the first, quote, democracy summer camp we've ever seen. I did do a Google search just on democracy summer camp, and it has popped up in numerous places, Democrats doing it, but has been a campaign orchestrated event. So I found one a Democrat congressman did, but it was all campaign funded, campaign oriented, not funded by taxpayers.
Which leads me to the next question. If it is determined that at least some taxpayer money went to fund this effort, and it turns out that this was a partisan effort, is that not illegal?
Yeah, you'd be looking at some ethics concerns. You're not allowed to use taxpayer dollars to electioneer to do elections. So that would be something that would be put in front of the Pennsylvania Ethics Commission. And that could get we had House members that went to jail for using taxpayer money for electioneering. So that could carry with it serious penalties, fines, and jail time for individuals involved, including the governor moving forward. But, you know, because it's so secretive and they haven't released anything, like release the PowerPoint information. Obviously, there were videotapes of stuff that transpired because we're seeing it on social media. Who were the presenters, right? These are the kind of things that should be publicly sent out because it was taxpayer funded. So we know whether it was, in fact, illegal electioneering or just an overview how elections happen. But again, if it's an overview, why not have two election officials from counties going over how a Republican Democrat? But it seems like it was very one-sided, geared towards Democrats because of who attended. And we don't even have a list of who was even invited or how they determined who was invited. And by the way, it was national social media individuals. So nationally, the governor asked for people, as he's running for vice president of the Democratic Party, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's asking for national social media content individuals to come to Pennsylvania. So he's not even focused on Pennsylvania politics, it's national politics. Why? Why is the governor from Pennsylvania asking national individuals all across the United States to come into Pennsylvania for a democracy social camp? All valid questions, and all we don't have answers to any of it. Why?
And yet the governor's spokesman is described in Penn Live or describes this event in when he's quoted in Penn Live as saying it's nonpartisan. And it sounds like
Correct.
You don't believe him.
No, there's only one panel we've seen that was a bipartisan panel. And that panel had the governor's secretary of state, who was a Republican, on it. It wasn't some other Republican. It was his administration's, quote, Republican. And everything else was basically nonpartisan individuals talking about elections. So we only have one validated, quote, bipartisan. It's really questionable how bipartisan that really is. So I don't know how you can monitor this as nonpartisan when it seems like the invite list are all left-leaning Democrat individuals coming in to learn about Pennsylvania or elections in general, and it's unknown whether they hit campaign side and talked about pushing Democrat candidates and Democrat political positions.
If it turns out that this was a partisan effort, would it have been appropriate for Pennsylvania's Secretary of State, whose department is responsible for elections, to have attended this?
No, I think that would have been a huge conflict of interest. I'm a firm believer that the Secretary of State, who oversees elections, should absolutely not participate in any political party's event and should be completely nonpartisan and have a high standard of ethics at all times to make sure that decisions that are made by the Department of State are not viewed as partisan political decisions. And unfortunately, this Department of State we have in Pennsylvania has had secretaries that have made political decisions to benefit one party consistently and have actually gone against state law in their recommendations to how counties govern. They've gone against both state law, the U.S. Supreme Court, and the Pennsylvania Supreme Court in past rulings.
Now, Seth, your party is in the minority in the state house. Mm-hmm. What do you think the chances are of an investigation getting underway into this to get to the answer of these questions?
Oh, I have no doubt the House Democrats would even entertain this as a even a hearing. They don't care. They don't care about oversight. They don't even want to do a hearing on Donald Trump's assassination attempt. So Congress, you have a bipartisan, even leader, Minority Leader Jeffries has said, we're in. We need to figure out what happened. Here in Pennsylvania, the House Democrats don't even want to have the discussion around it. Because they don't believe in oversight. They don't care what the government does. They're all on summer vacation. As a matter of fact, the entire leadership team was bowling at the White House the other day. Joanna McClinton was actually at this event, the summer camp. She was actually one on the panels at this event.
You're talking about the House Speaker.
Yeah, the House Speaker, who's a Democrat, was actually at this summer camp. Kim Ward, President Pro Tem of the Senate, the counterpoint to Speaker Johnson, she wasn't invited. She wasn't there. There was no other Republican during that panel. So you can just tell how this is definitely a Democrat Party event. It was not a nonpartisan event.
So how then are you going to go about trying to get answers to these questions?
Well, number one, because there is a financial connection, filing right to know requests on emails, ask for the invite list, ask for PowerPoint, ask for any documents created for that, ask for receipts, how much did it cost, where was money spent, who funded the after happy hour with alcohol, who funded that, who was on the invitation list, who actually attended, who were the speakers, what did they talk about, what were the breakout sessions. So all of those documents that were created to put this event on, we're going to ask for the release of that information, as well as the finances of how this was put together and who at the governor's office was involved in staffing this. Did this start with the Department of State? What was Department of State's role in it? So interactions, email interactions between the governor's office and the Department of State on this, we're going to ask for all that information. Because I worry very much that if you don't push back on this now, it's only going to get worse and lead to actual, if nothing ethically happened this time around, at some point it will. So making sure there's a clean line of distinction between taxpayer funds and campaigning are always there, and make sure there's no connection between the two.
I'm talking with Representative Seth Grove, who is a Republican representing your county and also chair of the House GOP Appropriations Committee. Seth, how did you find out about this? So was it through Penn Live contacting you for comment, or how did you find out about this?
I found out about it through one of my colleagues sent me a social media post from one of the attendees. And I'm like, what the heck is this? So I started diving into a little bit more. Penn Live obviously did their story, and my comms guy, they reached out for a comment on it, and luckily I was aware of it. So, that's how I felt, and I continually try to find those social media posts to see who was talking and what they were talking about and stuff, because it's critically important we understand how taxpayer dollars were used during this event.
Now, let's switch gears here for a little bit. I want to get your take on the recently passed state budget. What are your overall thoughts of that budget?
So, financially, it put us in a very precarious position. So when Governor Shapiro took office, He had $8 billion in budgetary surplus and about $6 billion, between $5 and $6 billion in our rainy day fund. So two separate things, right? Rainy day fund is statutory restricted account that says you can spend this money during an economic downturn to try to prevent massive cuts to programs and stuff like that, right? And then you have budgetary surplus, which is just money sitting there. Now, our budgetary surplus isn't like we have a surplus year over year. That was created because we basically got billions of dollars from the federal government over COVID. We used that first, and we saved our state tax dollars and put them aside. So this is a one-time. That $8 billion is a one-time shot. Once it's spent, it's gone. It's not coming back. So the past two budgets, the budget increases were predicated off one-time surplus dollars, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Josh Shapiro went from $8 billion to now right around $3 billion in this budgetary surplus. This year's budget alone spends over $3 billion more than what we have in available revenue. So all this spending the past 2 years has been propped up by one-time surplus dollars. So next year's budget, just to keep it at current level, uses the remaining $3 billion. So he's basically spent $8 billion in budgetary surplus in 2 years. So if he wants to do any increases next year over the current year, so $46.7 billion budget is what was passed. To do any dollar more than that, they're going to have to find revenue to do that, which means you're now doing budget gimmicks, delaying payments, creating new one-time revenue sources, or you're raising taxes on individuals, or you're dipping into that rainy day fund, which should only be there for economic downturns. So his budgeting it's very DC budgeting, right? Spend more than what you bring in. At the state level, you can't print money, and we just, because we were so financially sound in our budgeting practices over the past 4 years, we were able to build up that budget surplus. His failure of financial leadership and financial mismanagement has really broke our budget process. And we're in the worst financial position we've been in probably 20 years with all that money just sitting there. Had he used it appropriately for one-time costs and not recurring expenses, we would have been in a much better position. But he's really bankrupted this state in just 2 short years of his administration because of reckless overspending.
The Democrats are always criticizing Republicans for not wanting to touch surplus dollars. They're saying that we have ample needs now that need to be financed, and we've got this surplus money over here. It shouldn't be sitting unused. We should use it now. What do you say to those critics?
Yeah, number one, it's your prototypical politician, right? Let's spend everything we have now to make you happy, and we'll worry about tomorrow later, right? That's how the federal government got in the position of, what, $35 trillion in debt? They're spending out more in debt than Department of Defense budget. That's what gets you into financial trouble. That's what gets you into like a financial death spiral where you don't have enough money to pay the bills anymore. And you're doing horrible financial decisions like massive tax increases, massive cuts, or a combination of the two, or like fake budgeting gimmicks to get through budgets. And Republicans, we weren't necessarily against using the surplus. We just wanted to use it responsibly. Let me give you a good example. The governor came out with this PA Sites program, of which he wanted to bond $500 million. It will cost the taxpayers $900 million because of all the fees and the costs with bonding, to spend $500 million over the next 2 years to work on pad sites to draw businesses in. I asked the budget secretary, I'm like, with the amount of surplus we have, why don't you use one-time funds to actually pay that so you don't have to incur an additional $400 million of cost to taxpayers and basically dedicate a revenue source that could be used for the general fund in the out years to pay for bond service for this program. And I never really got an answer outside of, well, we just thought it would be a good bond operative. ultimately, that was bonded. So not only did this budget overspend by $3 billion, it also ended up doing almost a $1 billion bond for a $500 million program that, you know, my kids will be paying for, and your grandkids or grandkids are going to be paying for the next 20 to 30 years because of this bond payment. That could have been used using the surplus one-time dollars. So if there's one-time cost, that's a good use of that. The other problem we have is one of the strongest growth revenue sources we had was actually the interest from the surplus. So we were overestimate by about $500 million this year. That came from those interest payments on the surplus. Well, if you draw down the surplus, you don't have those interest payments anymore. So you just cut your growth revenue in half. So not only does that hurt on the spend side, but also hurts on the revenue side moving forward. So our budget took a double whammy because of that failed budget, those failed financial management practices. At the same time, it incurred greater debt and long-term costs for the Commonwealth. So all around, it was a huge financial failure.
Now, you lawmakers had a decision to make with the budget pertaining to the judgment mm-hmm. from the Commonwealth Court and equity funding for school districts. Were you satisfied with the final budget in addressing Commonwealth Court's decision on that case?
Yeah, I think it missed the mark on numerous fronts. This budget was solely focused on just throwing money at a problem. That court case wasn't about throwing money at a problem. It was actually trying to improve the academic success of all students across Pennsylvania. So it failed. It failed miserably. Number one, it actually cut school choice. Cyber charter schools got $100 million cut because of that budget. And I'm going to really applaud our education chairman, committee chairman, Jesse Topper. He really fought to minimize those cuts because the House Democrats and Governor Shapiro, even to accept some people in the Senate Republicans, wanted a $200 to $300 million cut for cyber charter schools. That takes away school choice. That takes away options for kids moving forward. So really thankful for his leadership to try to minimize that. And, you know, had House Republicans been in charge, we would not have had any cuts to school choice. There wasn't any new school choice initiatives in this budget. So really, if you're looking as a parent to give your kids more options, it was a huge failure, massive failure for school choice. Didn't do anything with property taxes, didn't alleviate any burdens on property taxes, and that was even part of their court case. And even the House Democrats admit their report from the Basic Education Funding Commission did nothing on accountability. I brought that up on the floor during our debate on education bill they were moving out for a new funding formula. I brought up, they looked at 75 of the best school districts to see how much they spent. They never asked or looked at what those school districts actually did with their money to be successful. So even the appropriations chairman, the majority chairman, my colleague, Jordan Harris, even said on the House floor in response to that, well, we just need to put money and then we'll figure out how that money should be used later. So this entire plan is throwing money at a problem. So it's going to be wasted at the school district level. We're not going to see any advancement in education scores. We're not going to see kids moving out of poverty because of education, which just will throw money at the problem. So my guess is school districts are going to take this new money and they're going to put it in the reserve account. So next year we're going to see a massive increase in school district reserve accounts, even more than what we've seen. Right now, school districts are sitting on more reserve accounts than they've ever had in the history of Pennsylvania. They're in billions of dollars they're sitting on. That will increase exponentially because of this money being put in, because school districts can't spend it that quickly. And two, it was done after the budget, so they're just going to sit on it. So we're going to see no advancement in education at all this year with all that money being put in the system. There's no requirement of them spending that money on anything that works from those 75 school districts that have the best outcomes. So I think the entire thing is a huge failure. And the individuals ultimately that sued to get more money in the system, this is the kicker, they're going to go back to court because it's not enough for them. So they're going to go challenge that court ruling and go to the Supreme Court and try to have the Supreme Court mandate an amount of money to us. So ultimately, I think it was an epic failure all around for the citizens of the Commonwealth.
Wow. And of course, you're talking about the state Supreme Court.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. On another matter, before I let you go, of course, we've all heard the chatter that Josh Shapiro is being considered as a potential running mate for Kamala Harris. If he is the one chosen, and they get elected in November, is there any chatter up there in the General Assembly about what's next for the state of Pennsylvania if we lose him?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. So if you saw Roy Cooper, the governor of North Carolina, dropped out. He mm-hmm. dropped out because North Carolina's lieutenant governor is actually a Republican.
Right.
So if he would become vice president, when you'd have a Republican governor of the great state of North Carolina. We're not in that circumstance, because after the primary election, the lieutenant governor is basically a ticket, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have Austin Davis, who is lieutenant governor. He would ascend to the governorship, and then actually Kim Ward would become lieutenant governor under how that operates.
Okay.
So that's not a big issue. The issue with the overall ticket is, you know, obviously you have a popular governor. Now, his polling numbers moved last year from 61% approval rating. He's at 51% currently. Within the Democratic Party, the governor's stance on anti-Semitism, which I think the governor has the correct stance on anti-Semitism, but is not popular with the Democratic Party right now. Being pro-Israel, being pro-Jewish is not popular. They are pro-Palestine within the Democratic Party right now. That doesn't help the base at all, having Josh appear on the ticket. You have Josh's position on school choice, right? For as astute politician as he thinks he is, he's in the worst case scenario, right? So he's come out and said, I support school choice. So all the teachers union and all the pro-public education advocates all across the swing states have actually sent a letter to Kamala Harris saying, don't pick Josh Shapiro as your vice president. He's school choice. He doesn't support us, and he doesn't need a high-profile position. We won't be voting for you if you pick him. On the same side, he vetoed school choice legislation and really hasn't done anything to get it done, just signed a budget that hurts school choice. So all the pro-school choice people don't like him either. So he's in this really weird position on education issues where he's just ticked off all sides of the issue and hasn't had any big accomplishments on either side of that. You have the sexual harassment issues with his former chief of staff. That's playing out there. So there's a lot of negativity heading into a tough presidential election that Josh Shapiro has created just in the first 2 years. So I don't know if it's advantageous to put him up there. Now, from Josh Shapiro's perspective, obviously he wants to be president of the United States. You know, being vice president in a Kamala Harris administration, does that help him? Now you're tied to anything she does in her administration. Now, minimum of 8 years out before you can run for president, right? You got 4 years of a Harris administration. Obviously, he's not going to run against her for president of the United States upon her reelection if she's elected. So, you know, Governor Shapiro's best bet to become president of the United States is actually for Trump to win this year. And for an open primary and not having an incumbent president in 4 years. So I think it's harmful for the Democrats to have him on this ticket at this point because of the positions and things he has done over the past 2 years, as well. It's probably not in his best interest if he actually wants to become president moving forward. So
I'll give you the final word. Anything you want to add before I say goodbye to you?
No, you covered it. You know, we have a governor using taxpayer funds to possibly manipulate the 2024 election when it's a priority swing state. The president of the United States is coming through this state. You know, we will select who that is. You know, you have a lot of budget problems that if we don't pick the right people in this next election, could realize in massive tax increases. So this election is critically important for the future of Pennsylvania. And you know, get out there to vote. And if you can't decide who you want to vote for, go grocery shopping in the morning. Take your grocery shopping bill to the polling place. Look at grocery shopping bill and then make a determination because that's been very harmful to Pennsylvanians over the past 4 years.
Seth, if you're able to get any answers regarding this democracy summer camp, I hope you'll give us a call and tell us what you found.
Absolutely. I'll be more than happy to follow up with you.
Representative,
thank you.
Representative Seth Grove, a Republican from York County who's chair of the House Republican Appropriations Committee. Seth, thank you so much for joining us today.
Appreciate it. Thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Bye-bye now. And we'll be back with the with more feedback on this Tuesday morning in just a bit. Stay with us.
Serving Barnesville, Schuylkill Haven, Tremont, and all of Schuylkill County, this is News Talk 830, WEEU.